You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to episode 220 of Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. At the weekend, Cherries went down 1-0 at the hands of Manchester City, but it was a good performance. Later on in this pod, I'm going to be joined by Neil Dawson and Matt Davies to talk all things Cherries and Sky Blues. But first, we'll just have a few of the best reactions outside the ground. Tix was the man on the mic.
Here we are outside Dean Court. Unfortunately, a 1-0, but that doesn't really paint the whole picture. Although Bournemouth didn't win, actually quite a good game, I thought, Paul.
Highly entertaining football, yeah. Both teams really went at it. And yeah. I felt, actually, we could have got something out of that game and probably should have done. We had quite a few chances. There was Tavernier had a chance, and then Tara had a good chance. And yeah. There's so many options, and then Dango is cross. I don't know what happened there. You know, he should have just played it along the floor. We should have scored a few today, and you don't often say that against Man City.
Hey Ollie, how are you?
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Yeah, it was a lot to look at, and I think it, on the whole, it was very good. Of course, against a very high quality team.
Yeah.
I think we played very well. I think Enes, who now, especially off the bench, looked amazing, actually.
Yeah, but had a chance, didn't he?
Tav, maybe not as great. I did say before the game, I don't think he should have started. And he just missed that chance, didn't he? That chance. You don't get those against Man City, and you need to put them away when you do.
Yeah, there were a limited amount of chances, but I did feel like we had better chances than they did, which is that certainly in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, it looks like they dominated, but when you actually watch the game, you see the chances. It wasn't that narrative at all, was it?
No.
I think that on the whole, we actually probably played slightly better football, and I'd say that, you know, a lot of the players today played their socks off. As I said, it sliding doors moment. You know, if Tav puts that away, what would happen? Do you know?
Yeah, there's a few like that. The Ouattara cross, if that had been lower, then maybe someone would have got to it. And obviously the Unau header and the Dom Solanke overhead kick, which kind of came out of nowhere. But sometimes you just got to take a punt, haven't you?
If he scored that as an equaliser, that would go down as probably one. That would probably go down in like Charlie Daniels' goal. Yeah. You know, like Harry Wilson free kick against Man City. You know, we'd just have always a good goal against City. But it was just a bit off, wasn't it?
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? You okay there? You all right?
All right, yeah. Yeah. No, we're good. Yeah, we've just enjoyed a brilliant game of football.
It was a brilliant game of football, wasn't it?
Yeah, really great.
I think that's probably the best performance all season, but unfortunately we're not the winning side. But overall, I think everyone was brilliant today. I don't really think, like, the only player I think wasn't really the best today was Tavernier because like all the misplaced passes in the first half, but not by a long shot. He was brilliant today. I think man of the match today for me, between two people, Brian Christie and Adam Smith, I think Adam Smith had every single person he went up against on lockdown, and Ryan Christie in the middle of the park, brilliant. I think that's but I probably had to say Adam Smith, my man of the match today.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I think everyone really put in an incredible shift, didn't they? And a really, really good game for us to watch. I don't think many people expected Bournemouth to get points today. However, a lot of people did expect that we would get heavily beaten, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, we've lost today, but you know what? We can't fault Bournemouth. This is the Bournemouth we love to watch, you know, and every minute was really entertaining. And the chances we had, they just weren't quite there.
Yeah.
But I think every player was just 100% committed, and that's the Bournemouth we want to see. And I think the manager's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And I think going forwards, you know, they've obviously done brilliantly today because they know they're playing Man City. But, you know, it wasn't... Okay, it was a defeat, but it could have been worse. So I think they've done well. Hats off to them today. Excellent.
Fantastic. Hats off to you too. Thank you both for coming
on. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Hiya.
Hi. What's your name?
Andy.
Oh, nice to meet you, Andy. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, yeah, not too bad. Thank you. What do you think of that game today?
Yeah, it was always going to be a tough one against City, wasn't it? But
yeah.
I thought, especially second half, they didn't really produce a lot, City. We really stopped them from getting forward, especially once Haaland went off.
Yeah.
We really managed to contain them, and I would have liked to have seen the attacking changes come a bit earlier in the game.
Mm.
When he's standing on Sinisterra and Nunal with 5 minutes to go, it's not a lot of time for them to do something, but we still did well. We really controlled it the second half, I thought. We grew into the game a lot more, and after that opening spell of 20-25 minutes when City controlled it, we really sort of matched them in the end.
Absolutely. I think if any Man City fans are watching this, which they probably will be, they'll probably be thinking, what are they talking about? But at the end of the day, from our point of view, our results against Man City in the past have not been great. And actually, it may not have been a win, it may not have been a draw, but to hold them to one goal, I think that's quite a good result. It'd be interesting to know how many teams that Man City go to this season that managed to do that.
Absolutely, yeah. There's not many teams that can contain them that sort of way.
Yeah.
I thought we did a good job, like I said, after the first 20-25 minutes of containing them. I mean, seeing Foden's close control up close in, like that is unreal, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought they did a really good job going man for man at the start and then spreading it out in the second half. Like I said, those attacking changes, I would have liked to have seen them made 15 minutes earlier, give us a real chance to go at it. But in the end, that last 10-15 minutes, we were all over them.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Is there somebody who stuck out for you today you thought man of the match? For us.
Well, I thought Christie grew into the game. Sort of maybe after 60 minutes, I was thinking it's time for him to come off. But
yeah,
he sort of grew in that last half an hour as well. I'm always impressed when Dango comes on, and when he plays, he came on and sort of made a bit of a difference down that left-hand side and was creating
was
some
brave,
space for us.
There,
so.
Yeah.
And Sinisterra is always coming on and just runs straight at them, which is always great to see. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. Thanks for coming on. Thanks.
Hello, Tiggs.
Hey, buddy, you all right?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, good. What do you think of that today?
Well, I mean, it's the same story. We play so well, we don't get the rub of the green.
Yeah.
How many chances do we have in the half? How many chances do we have in the second half? None. Foden sitting on his backside, moaning and groaning. I mean, you know, we looked... how many strikers did we have? Seven? We had four, you know,
like
all over them. Probably the best team in the world at the moment, wasting time. Well, don't get me on referees, because we have it every week, and we've just got to suck it up, because...
Yeah.
They come to Bournemouth and the linesman see. I mean, you know, fullback against winger, breaking into the box, and suddenly it's a free kick to them.
Yeah.
And, you know, our winger goes down the other side. But excellent, excellent, excellent. How can you disagree with what a wonderful performance it was? And anybody who's watching this around the country will say, you know, little Bournemouth, we're here. And don't you think we're not going to be about for a long, long time? But sort out this blooming queuing and searching on the North Stand club. We're not a nasty club. What have you found in 2 years of searching people? Polos, Witherall sweets. I mean, come on.
Umbrellas.
Don't start about the umbrellas.
Flasks.
Flasks. You know, get a grip, Bournemouth.
Make
it nice. We are good. Thanks, chaps.
Thanks.
Well, we're pleased to announce that this episode of the Back of the Net podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Green King Sport venues are showing every single televised Bournemouth fixture over the 23-24 season. And with more than 900 sports pubs across the UK, it doesn't matter where you're based, you can catch every single minute of the action. If you watch our vlog, we actually went to two of them at the weekend. We had a quick one in the Richmond and then Brunswick, and I got a free drink on my Score King app. Look, you get 10% off if you download this, the Green King Sports app, and also this month, because of the Six Nations as well, chance to win free Guinness and also one of six holidays as well. So that's the Green King Sport app. This is Back of the Net. We've got a familiar face, by the way, of Neil Dawson. Neil, how you doing?
Yeah, very good, very good. Buoyed after yesterday, looking forward to talking about it.
And also a regular on FanCams, Matty Davies. How you doing, mate?
I'm well, Sam. Very well indeed. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to catching up with you boys over yesterday's great game.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Neil. We're all feeling really good. We've not won in 2024. Well, not in the league. Yet, I've felt the best I've felt for some time. Yeah. Why?
I don't know. I said that after the game. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a defeat so much. I think because of the context of who we were playing, our astonishingly bad record against them since Premier League days, and just the quality, obviously, they got on the pitch. And to see us go toe-for-toe, use some amazing tactics, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit, and just for once not sit with 11 men behind the ball waiting for the inevitable 3-0 and have a right good go at them. And I thought, you know, they were time-wasting in the corner at the end. You can't get a better tribute than that.
They're one of these teams, Matt, that you sort of wake up in the morning and think, we're playing Man City, great, I can't wait. But now that's changed the narrative a little bit, that performance yesterday, because now I think we can give it a go when playing.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we did yesterday from the first minute, really. And there was a period in the first half where I was probably a little bit concerned, obviously, after we conceded. Our press was so high to start with. Yeah. The game plan was clearly to strangle the life out of Manchester City and really go toe-to-toe with them. Obviously, with the quality that they've got, they're able to play through that. They're tactically astute, and they're certainly technically very good to be able to do that. And we were caught short a few times at the bat and got away with a couple. And then when they got the first goal, you know, we'll talk about it in more depth as we go on, but Senesi at fault, and you sort of think, is that going to knock the stuffing out of us? And I feel that it did for a little bit. And we were struggling to find our men. There was a bit of a lack of fluidity. And the game was passing us by a little bit, I thought, towards the end of the first half. It's probably first half stoppage time. We seemed to pick ourselves up, get a second wind. The crowd were up. And it really encouraged us, and that set the precedent for me for the second half, which was for me a phenomenal show. As Neil said, you know, basing it on the opposition we were up against, I thought it was absolutely superb, and a joy to watch.
A joy to watch. If you're listening via the audio pod, we'd really appreciate a review, by the way. So if you're on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever it is, just tap the place where you can do a review. We would so appreciate a 5-star review. But if you're watching on YouTube, you can like and subscribe as well. We'd truly appreciate that. So look, we've got the best of both worlds here, because you weren't there, Matt, but you managed to take it in. See the delights of Scott Parker?
Yeah.
Apparently he was quite good, though.
He was very complimentary about us, to be fair. He actually spoke better than I've ever heard him speak. You know, when he was rolled out to the media when he was manager of us, I thought at times he struggled to string a sentence together. However, he was very articulate last night and very sort of considered, I would say, in his words about us. Very complimentary. Obviously talked about the money that's now been invested in our squad and how impressed he's been. But he must be looking on with some envy, really, and almost kicking himself under.
He just needed to hold out that little bit longer.
Yeah, under the Sky Sports table and thinking, why didn't I just keep my mouth shut and go with it, really? Because look what's happened now.
Disappointing Cardigan, I thought, though, because obviously I was at the game, so I didn't see it, but I've watched clips of it since. And, you know, obviously when he was here, he had that £1,500 with the three stripes.
He's gone Primark.
I was going to say H&M, because I don't think he's dropped that quite that far. No, but it was a very bog standard grey chunky knit. There you go.
That usually indicates they're looking for a job, isn't it, when they put themselves in the spotlight like that again, because he's been out of the game for quite a while. Yeah. Since his...
Wait, he pleaded in poverty.
All that, yeah.
Look, this is all I can afford.
Yeah. He, unemployed.
Yeah, it's agent driven, isn't it? So you see it. I remember Tony Pulis used to do it on a cyclical basis. He'd lose a job. They take some time out. They normally have a long holiday with the kids. And then I think their agent says, you've got that danger now where people stop talking about you. So you need to get yourself back on the telly. And Sky obviously welcome all people like that. I mean, TalkSport, I think I was listening on the way into the game. Troy Deeney was commentating on TalkSport. So He's now had his first manager stint. He's back to. So yeah, I think it's standard doing the merry-go-round. There'll be a championship club that take a chance on him, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so. He's trying to remain relevant, isn't he, basically? Like you're saying, Neil, and that's the game, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So, look, we got to Dean Court. Safe standing is finally here in certain sections of the North Stand. Away fans have got it as well. I think it's like row J and above or something like that, or row L and above. I was in row L, so I managed to experience it. Still a few people sitting down.
Yeah, saw that.
A lot of people
didn't get the memo.
Yeah, pointing fingers on social media. But did it help to improve the atmosphere, or was it just because it was Man City and we were playing well? I mean, we won't know until a few games, really, will we?
No, we won't. It's hard to know because it was a brilliant performance. So, and the crowd always react to good performances and energy. Yeah. So I guess we'll know more after Leicester and I can't remember who's next up. Is it Sheffield United?
Burnley.
Sheffield United. So they will know more after those two games.
Yeah.
Because from sitting in the East Stand, it didn't look any different, really, other than the metal barriers, because the back of the South Stand normally stand up anyway, don't they?
Yeah, they do. North Stand. It's I found it weirdly. I had less room.
Right.
I don't know what that was. There were stewards there checking tickets and stuff just to make sure that other people weren't in there. But, you know, I like standing. I like the experience. But there were some people sat down.
Were they at the front of the standing section? Because I've seen the pictures of it on social media.
They must have been.
Otherwise, they're just going to be looking at the row of a back of animals, aren't they?
They must have been. And, you know, they must be aware of the situation. But I think it did help. You know, like the little red and black alternating banners as well.
Watching on TV, the atmosphere was a bit sporadic. At times I was thinking, oh, it's gone really flat here, particularly when, as it always does with us at home, we go 1-0 down and it just goes dead. And all you can hear really is the away fans on TV. But then it did pick up as the team picked up, the crowd picked up. And at times I thought, God, it's crackling. It's as loud as I've known it for a little while, you know, watching on TV, which I'm not used to doing. I'm usually there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Overall, not too bad. Still could be better, I think, but that's the demographic of the fan base that we've got in many ways.
Yeah.
It's the 10,000 club, isn't it? A lot of them of an older generation, but better than it has been, I would say, in recent times.
The atmosphere mics on the centre line of the East Stand, isn't
it? Yeah, that doesn't help.
I believe. Yeah. So the away fans will always sound louder disproportionately than they probably are.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah.
Of course, there was a lot of noise on 69 Minutes with fireworks going off. And you know what? I was looking around thinking, what on earth's going on here?
Yeah.
But it turned out that it was a tribute to Eddie Mitchell. And I suppose it's quite apt, really, isn't it, to have fireworks? Because he was a man who provided them himself.
He was a disruptor, wasn't he? And it disrupted the game. Because when the first one went off, literally a couple of people near me completely and utterly shat themselves. So it was because it was less of a firework, more of a gunshot, the first one. And then everyone kind of got what was happening. Didn't make the Eddie Mitchell link myself till I got home and read about it on social media. But I guess the club didn't do anything, so I suppose his family, I would have thought, it would have been behind it.
Or ESA or Footy Lab or whatever.
Doing it on the 69 minutes, which is right, because we should have done a minute. So I don't know if the club might have one planned in the match coming up. I don't know. But
I was thinking about this morning. He must have done something pretty bad to be A, from banned from the club, and B, for the club not to recognise his death.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Apart from a little post out on social media.
Yeah, that's right,
You know, on the day, they didn't really, there was no mention of it at all, was there? So whatever he did to ban himself from the club.
And arguably, without him, we wouldn't necessarily know where we are. We don't know where we'd be, but
he was a divisive character, like we've all said, when he divided opinion and he ruffled feathers. Mm. But you can't argue with the impact that he's made within the club to where it is, from where it was to where it is now.
There's very few people. Obviously, there's a lot of people that took part in the club being in the Premier League. So you could say people like Jan Kermigan or whatever. But in terms of catalysts for the club being in the Premier League, you know, you can start to name them off. You know, there's probably about five or six of guys that originally saved it when we went into administration and you know, so on and so on. But there aren't that many. And he's the first one to die of that lot. So, you know, the sort of the Eddie Howes of the world and stuff like that, that were absolutely key to it, Max Denham. But all of them were there because of Eddie Mitchell's contacts or knowledge. Yeah, or he brought Max to the club. He brought Eddie back to the club. You know, I was really surprised that they, whatever he did, surely could have been buried for the sake of 2 minutes of applause.
Well, you'd have thought so, wouldn't you? One thing you can say, but one thing I always thought about Eddie Mitchell is he's very proactive. You know, he wasn't a billionaire, so he didn't have billions to pour into the club. But what he did do, he did it very proactively, and he was positive. He wanted infrastructure change. He wanted the club to grow.
Yeah.
And I think he was one of the first chairmen that had that foresight, really.
Yeah.
Even though perhaps he didn't have the financial muscle to be able to make it happen, but then of course along came Max, and the rest was
everything
history.
Changed. Yeah. I'm just glad we didn't pay tribute by all fucking up the road to Southampton, like he suggested at one point to the lad whose eyes were popping out. But what a character. Rest in peace, Eddie Mitchell, that's for sure.
Indeed.
So let's take a look at the league table then. This is where we are. We are 14th at the moment, as we said, yet to register a win in 2024. But Neil, we've been saying that it's one of the best losses I think I've seen for quite a while, and it's also because of who it is as well. Manchester City, I mean, it doesn't really matter what team they put out.
Yeah.
They've got quality sprinkled all over that team. So it didn't matter that Kevin De Bruyne was on the bench or whatever. Whoever's playing is going to be quality. But I thought in some ways it was I labelled it a game of two halves initially, but I actually watched the game back this morning and we actually troubled them a little bit in the first half as well. But in the second half, we really took the game to them.
Yeah. It took them a long time to work out what we were doing. I think that was the problem. They weren't to face that. Obviously, they had the Brentford game recently where Brentford played 6-3-1 and I think narrowly lost to them, didn't they? And just sat with the bat. And Wolves did the same to them at their place early in the season, one with one shot. Having defended the whole game, and so that's probably what they would have expected us to have done. And the fact that we went man for man on them, which was extraordinary how brave we were in doing that. So Zabani following Foden around the pitch. There was twice in the first half when Foden ended up back with his centre halves getting the ball off them, and Zabani was stood next to him further forward than Solanke. So it was only two occasions, but it happened. And I mean, the old boys behind me were going berserk because, of course, they hadn't worked out the tactics of it all. And they were like, what's he doing up there? Getting back to Zamani, get back. They were screaming at him like, what's he doing? You know, and Kirkes was doing the same thing. Yeah. And they couldn't work out because, of course, what City want to do is drop deep. You keep your back four and then they turn around and they all come together doing lots of intricate passes and you're doomed, as we've seen time after time against them. So it just stopped all that space from happening. And it was just astonishing to watch, particularly when they did break over the top, because we literally had two defenders back. Yeah.
I was just going to say that, Neil. The worry for me first half was that the press was so high and like I said, at the start of the show, you could see the game plan from the off, trying to strangle the life out of them. But when they did break through it, we were in real trouble, particularly down Kirkes's side.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Kirkes was coming so high and nobody was covering him. So you had sort of, at times you had a 2-on-3-on-1 situation down our left-hand side, which was a concern. And when they did play through the press, Haaland let us off the hook, didn't he, when he shanked that one wide.
Oh, yeah, Foden took that lovely touch and then put him in. And I was expecting the net to bulge up.
Yeah, yeah, so was I. Was. And I thought they'd broken the press and we go 1-0 down early and here we go again sort of thing. But that didn't happen. So that was a little bit of a turning point, I thought, in the game. And you had Lewis Cook, of course, when Zabani was following Foden, Cook was dropping into right back. So Smith was pushed high up the field. Yeah. And you could see the plan, and it did ruffle City's feathers. But of course, the quality they've got, they soon tactically wised up to it.
Yeah.
You know how astute they are and technically good they are. And they were starting to play through the lines and through the press, particularly the sort of the mid part of the first half. It was it was sort of Man City domination, really. And the two chances of note we had, Kirkes was one, wasn't it? Where he rifled one.
That was about 60 seconds after that.
Yeah.
And that strike from Haaland.
I mean, that was a half chance at best, wasn't it, really? The other one was Christie, wasn't it?
Towards the end of the half,
left-footed, where he caught the keeper.
On target.
Still not hard, but on target.
Good effort. But at half-time, the key for me, and I said it watching the telly to the people that I was with, we're in the game, stay in the game.
And
we stayed in the game first. Yeah. And going in at 1-0, I was quite pleased, to be honest. Yeah. And I was hoping for, you know, what we served up in the second half. That's what I was hoping for.
It was. I mean, look, what did you make of the team, Neil? The team selection? Because I mean, we'll just show it now. I mean, a lot of people have been looking at Tav, scrutinising his play recently, thinking he's not been brilliant for us. And then in that first half, especially, I didn't think he was particularly brilliant.
No, he was our poorest player. He was our poorest player on the day, which is interesting because he was, to me last year, he was the first name on the team sheet. And when he got injured, I thought we were, you know, probably with Solanke. I think when he got injured, I thought we always suffered when we didn't have him last year. But I'm not surprised he started, because I think the one thing we've known with Iriola is he plays a team based on the ability to understand his system rather than individuals. Hence why we saw Jadon Antony start three games at the beginning of the season when there were arguably better and more expensive players. But Jadon Antony can press for 70, 80 minutes and doesn't lose the discipline of forgetting to track back. So I don't think he trusts Sinisterra to do that against a good side yet.
Yeah.
He will always play Cliver against the good sides because Cliver has got 90 minutes of running in him.
And he just presses, doesn't he?
And just presses presses. So you can pretty much guarantee the front four that played yesterday will be his first choice front four. The others will only get a look in if we're playing sides that he thinks might, you know, maybe we don't need to be as disciplined against. Yeah. So maybe Sheffield United at home, he plays Sinisterra. But no, so I'm not surprised that Tav starts, but it's a shame. He needs to find form. He looks like he's lost a bit of confidence.
Yeah. And by the way, Lloyd Kelly, not being involved. We spoke about Kirkes already, but they've said about an MRI scan or something to do with his hip.
I must have, you know, when you see that, when the team sheet was released and there's no Lloyd Kelly, and then you're looking on the bench, nope, he's not on the bench. Mm. But yesterday, on the Friday, Ariola had said, nope, no fresh injury problems, we're all good. You sort of think, oh no, what's going on there? Mm. But I'd be surprised. I mean, Ariola said it was a hip problem, didn't he? And he's got to go for tests, and I'll be surprised. We've got a long way to go until the end of the season, and we're going to need Lloyd Kelly. And Lloyd Kelly will need to put himself in the shop window still, won't he? He'll need to play matches. There's no way I think he's feigning injury unless something drastic's gone on behind the scenes. No,
he's played loads of games since the window shut, a month ago now?
Yeah.
And he's played, if he was going to have thrown his toys, we wouldn't have seen him since the window. So
didn't this happen before, when a player didn't sign a contract for a while and it seemed like they weren't being played? I can't remember who it was.
Josh King, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't think, when he's played, he's looked really committed. Yeah. I think it's more likely that he picked up the hip injury in our last game, and Iriola's just doing an Eddie Howe. Yeah. And they've probably known all week he wasn't going to play.
Yeah,
but if he'd gone on the Friday and said he's not playing, then they would have known that Kirkes is a far more attacking player than Lloyd Kelly.
Yeah.
And Pep Guardiola would have realised that we need to think that he'll be bombing forward.
They tried to exploit that anyway, didn't they? As soon as he, from the off, really. Yeah. Kirkes was targeted, wasn't he, from a defensive viewpoint.
So. Yeah. There's those players we can really heap praise on. Mm. Chrissy was phenomenal. He did some Messi-esque dribbling in his own penalty box at one stage in the first half. I thought Semenyo was good, and he was being a menace. Solanke was working hard. But Adam Smith as well, right? My God, that man. He's so consistent.
He defies his age, and he continues to defy his age, doesn't he, really? Because I was worried at the players that he was going to be up against.
Oh, I thought, him against maybe Doku or whatever. I thought, chance.
He brings Doku on and you think, oh no, Smithy's run out of steam. What was it, 60, 70 minutes or whatever it was. I thought he's going to roast him on that win. But he never, I don't know, he beat him once.
No.
And Smithy was up to the challenge. He was absolutely rock solid. And there was one challenge, I think it was first half, full-blooded. I don't know if you boys remember.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, where he didn't get, Pep didn't react at all.
He didn't react at all. And it was a fair check. You know, I was saying to the people I was with, again, 30 years ago, that's even the refs.
Oh yeah.
Even the refs applaud him.
Yeah. He won the ball. It's just force these days. And there's the force that he went in. But
it was a full-blooded challenge. Yeah. And he set his stall out there, didn't he, Smithy? It becomes psychological. You know, the players that he's up against,
I've never understood the stick he's had in certain quarters. Never understood it. I think he's pretty consistent most weeks, and he's superb at best.
Yeah.
And he was still, in that last minute, he was still overlapping that one with Nathan Ake to block it. It was not quite the right ball from Semenyo, which was a shame. But you think, he's seen off the first winger. He's seen off Doku, and he's overlapping in the 90th minute.
His fitness levels
incredible.
But he doesn't enjoy his football, though. Did you hear that?
I thought it was quite sad, that. Not sad as in that he said it, but sad that he felt it.
Mm. It was with the Moose on Talk Sport, and it was posted this morning. And it's I did really like the rawness of it, though. It's mm-hmm. so nice just to hear footballers being honest. And he even said, you know, I could do my media talk right now, my fake talk, and say this and that. But he didn't. And I really like that from him.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's Adam Smith in a nutshell. And that sums him up. He's a good, honest professional.
He is, yeah.
Reliable. Will always do the job for you. So it speaks volumes of him as a character, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we're certainly going to need him because if Lloyd Kelly is out for a little while, then the back four that we've got is our back four, really. You know, Meppham can come in for Zabani. You wouldn't want him to come in left side for Senesi. And we have no reserve left back. No. So when Max Ahrens comes back, I don't know, when's Max due back? I thought he was coming back.
I thought he was in.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we did it on the preview the other day. It's gone over my head already. Like a few weeks, maybe.
Right. Because he'll be needed at left or right back with Adam Smith. Because I would be amazed if Kirkez stays fit the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And Senesi suspension, tight ropes.
He's on eight, is he, at the moment? Eight yellows?
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. So it's... we need to get this. We need to win these clumper games, and then it doesn't matter so much if we've got to put Dango back at left back.
That's right. Yeah.
It's by the way, the referee. I don't know if you feel differently to what in the stadium. It felt like maybe not the first half, but certainly as the second half progressed, there was a lot of vitriol aimed at the ref, and we've never really had good experiences with Jared Gillett, have we?
No.
And it don't know. I mean, it seemed there was a bit of gamesmanship from Man City at times. It felt like he was giving fouls maybe too easily. But I did watch parts back this morning and I was like, oh, maybe I was maybe jumping the gun a little bit because it wasn't actually that bad. What did you think when you were watching on the TV?
It was, and I had a couple of texts from people saying referee was shocking, worst referee. And I was thinking, I went back to him actually and said, he wasn't as bad as Rebecca Welsh's performance against Forest or is it Darren England against Fulham? Neither of those two was bad. Yes, he let some things slide and you felt like he was favouring Man City a little bit. There were certain things that went on that you thought he's not managing the game how he should be. So I wouldn't say it was the best refereeing performance in the world, but I don't think he had a shocker.
No.
I don't think he had a shocker.
No, he didn't deserve the... Normally, if you boo a referee off at half and full time, they've given two dodgy penalties against you, or they've sent someone off.
There was none of that.
There was none of that.
It was the management of the game.
Yeah. He did favour them in terms of the way they're letting they've been told to let the game go more now on physical challenges. He let the game go more for them than us.
Yeah.
But I think it's standard big club bias that we've seen time and time again.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, well, we're just looking at the match timeline now, actually, just taking a look at the various changes that we made. The first one being Daniel Ouattara coming on for Tavernier, then Alex Scott for Cliver. You can see that Romain Fevre came on later on as well as Sinisterra and Unal. I thought the changes that he made, proactive or what?
Yeah.
This is what we've always wanted, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I know we've lost the game, but it's exciting. And did we have any defenders on the pitch at the end?
There were two left at the end.
Unreal.
The bit I love, and I think, why is that no manager ever done that before, is the Lewis Cook into the back four.
Yeah, I know.
He did it before.
He did it when we at QPR, when we came back from 2-0 down. And if you think about it, When a side's settled in into a 1-0 and they're, you know, even Man City would have to defend the last 10 minutes of a 1-0, it's going to happen. Do you want the centre back being your playmaker? Because that's what happens. And we've seen over the years, you know, Steve Cook or Tommy Elphick or whatever having to step forward looking for that killer pass because there's no one in front of them. Or do you have someone who can actually pass a football? So, you know, you think, why is... I don't know, I'm sure other managers in the world have done it, but we've never seen it at Bournemouth. So that whole thing of, like, we're chasing the game now, we'll playmate from the back with Lewis Cook as opposed to a centre-half lumping it into the box.
Absolutely.
It's just, it's brilliant.
And I think I've said this before, it's not just him having the bravery to do it, Irriola, it's having the foresight to see it and think, I'm going to put Lewis Cook in the back four. Because what other manager in the world, what other fan would have thought of that?
Yeah.
You know, and this is where I think we've stepped up with Areola from, with the greatest respect, Gary O'Neill.
Yeah.
Even, you know, Scott Parker, Jonathan Woodgate. This is where it is a step up because he sees that. And when he takes off, what I loved, which is linked to that, Neil, really, was when he takes off Senesi and he puts on Favre in a number 10 role.
Yeah.
When we're 1-0 down to Manchester City, he knows it's going to leave us wide open on the break.
Yeah.
But he's going for it. He's not just thinking, we'll keep it at 1-0, we'll keep things tight, and we might be able to nick something from a set piece and nod someone in the 95th minute.
Yeah.
No, he's going for it. And it's just an absolute, it's so refreshing. It's something that even under Eddie Howe, I don't think he was that expansive and that brave.
He wasn't. No, we'd chuck all the forwards on.
I remember us
finishing a game with when you had Josh King, Lees Mousset, Callum Wilson, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was a centre half hoofing it in from the wing, and the other team heading it out. And then you hoof it in, and they had it out.
And the forwards getting in each other's way.
Yeah.
With no real plan.
Because then who did we finish on the pitch? We had Sinisterra, Dango, Enes Unal, Solanke, and Fevre.
So, incredible.
Yeah. And our fullbacks always like to get forward. And they did. So.
And the difference, I think, from the first to the second half, again, was Iriola recognising that we weren't going to be able to press them like we were to start with, because we're just going to run out of steam, run out of gas, and they're going to pick that off. But so there was more balance to the press on their second half. And where we lost our way in the first half and the lack of fluidity and the cohesion went for a while, that came back second half. And that was a result of the more balance in the press. And it allowed our midfield to gain a little bit more control. Christie was pushed further forward.
Yeah.
And we were getting Cliver in the game as well, which meant from midfield, we were then spreading the balls wide to the wide men and the fullbacks pushing on. And like you've said earlier, Neil, that, you know, come the end, they didn't have an answer to it, City. They were panicking. No. And that's the first time I've ever seen City panic. You know, balls were going into row Z.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were trying to slow the game down, which the only frustration for me is that we couldn't maintain that momentum. You know, when you're chasing the game 1-0 and it's relentless, it's attack after attack. We couldn't do that so much. We had to pick our moments because City liked to dominate the football, and they were still having periods of play where they were passing it, but they wanted to slow the tempo down.
They did.
Slow the game down and manage it and dictate things from their aspect. So it wasn't relentless pursuit of an equaliser, was it? Where it was coming back at them time after time. However, as we'll go on to talk about, I'm sure, we certainly had our chances, didn't we?
Tavernier, I think Semenyo fired across and then Tavernier. It looked like an open goal on the vlog. I was like, you know, he should have hit the target. He didn't.
Yeah.
He pulled one wide as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dom Slank hit the end having an overhead kick that went there were a few of them,
plus
the header from Unal as well,
which was a good save
from Semenyo.
They didn't make enough of the save, I didn't think, with that, but because someone on TV, they showed where the ball was, didn't they? So it was halfway across the line.
So what happened was
from Solanke
the ball come across, and Edison, to his credit, anticipated that Solanke was going to get a head on it,
yeah,
so he actually positions himself behind the line to push it out. So he, you know, right, nowhere near over the line, but it was unfortunate.
It was on the line though, wasn't it?
It was on the line.
Half the
speed that's coming. It was, you know, a second him moving a millisecond later, and that would have gone in off his wrist.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was and the Enes Unal one at the end. I mean, I was in midair because from the east stand it looked in.
It looked in on the telly.
Yeah,
and it was difficult because you know, a lot of people have said, why didn't he put it back across goal? But I think the neck muscles involved to do that, because he was up in the air already. Yeah. I think he probably did the right thing.
Right, he headed it down, which is I'm sure his teacher told him at school in Turkey.
He did
head it down, Enes. Head it down.
In Turkey.
But so unlucky. So unlucky. I mean, this game, I just feel as though we need to give ourselves credit, because sometimes when teams, you know, even at 1-0, you know, the big teams will try to manage the game, which Man City did, but we troubled them at times. And, you know, we did have more of the ball in the second half. Well, it certainly felt like that. But, I don't know. I think we should maybe give ourselves a pat on the back for that performance rather than Man City were poor.
I think so.
They weren't poor.
No.
They weren't poor. And
Rodri was fantastic. And John Stones was...
He was really good.
For Phil Foden, for me, was...
Yeah. So there you go. See, we've already named
three players that were outstanding for him. But one thing that struck me, though, boys, was that they weren't in second gear.
No.
So many times when they played us before, we've sort of said they never got out of second gear, did they, really? And it was a bit of a stroll for them.
Yeah.
That certainly was not the case yesterday. And we went absolutely toe-to-toe with them. And when you look at the stats, I'm not a big stats man, but when you look at the stats after the game of shots on target, possession, corners, territory, you know, successful passes, it's a real matchup. It is a real matchup. And it's the first time that we've managed to match him. All that was lacking was the killer instinct.
Yeah.
From
you,
us. The
you can see by the players they left on the pitch. So normally when you play Man City or Liverpool, they get into a period of ascendancy and then they remove the best players from the pitch to keep their legs fresh, because that's how they play 70 games a year. Yeah. No other teams can seem to do it. So, Rodri would have toddled off and, John Stones would have toddled off, and they'd have brought on, not De Bruyne, but they'd have brought on one of the lesser, in Man City terms.
Younger players.
Oscar Bob or something.
Yeah, Oscar Bob, exactly. Yeah. So that's they were bringing on players to keep the... Yeah. Doku and De Bruyne were coming on and no one decent went off.
No, exactly that.
All the main ones had to stay on and win that game, see that game out.
Did you see Pep's post-match comments?
I was going to talk about that. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen it, but just one of the quotes, Bournemouth had 7 days... every second of the week dreaming to beat the best team in the world. I mean,
that is Pep, Matt. That is Pep managing his own team. And man, that's man
management. I don't see a problem with it.
He's protecting his own interests there. He's protecting his player.
He's a manager of Man City. He's not a neutral commentator.
He's bigging his players up. He's saying how proud of them he is, how much work they've put in.
Is that him being defensive then? Because people are questioning whether they are total contenders, etc.
He's protecting his team and he's keeping their confidence high and
he called them Superman. They just beat Bournemouth 1-0 and he's calling them Superman. He then beat Real Madrid 1-0 in a European Cup semi-final with injuries. They just beat us. But so you've got to think, well, why is he doing that?
Yeah.
And he's doing that for a specific reason. And if you were one of his players, you'd be hearing that and you'd be thinking, I'm gonna go and run through a brick wall. Like Klopp does it. Alex Ferguson was the master of it. He's the manager of Man City.
Do you think it'd be mind games to Jurgen and Arteta maybe?
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it's mind games really. Yeah. I would say he's just keeping his players feeling up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he probably didn't call them Supermen
in the changing room.
No, that's the difference.
Not.
Yeah.
All their wins recently have been by very narrow margins. They've not been blowing teams away like you'd expect them to do.
Yeah, and I suppose you could levy that, Sammy, going back to what you were talking about, should we give ourselves credit? People will say, and I was thinking it as well, maybe it's not Man City that are firing on all cylinders at the moment.
Yeah.
They're not in the greatest vein of form, but they still managed to dig results out, and they did yesterday. Let's be honest about it, boys. At the end of the day, there's two ways to look at this. You can look at it as a positive performance, but we still lost the game without scoring a goal, and we haven't won a game in the Premier League this year.
Yeah.
So if you want to play devil's advocate and flip it around a little bit, without a win in seven games, and we're sort of 14th in the league and dipping.
Yeah,
I don't see it like that. I think that Neil, you've already touched upon it. These next batch of fixtures that we've got, I think there's an opportunity for us to really pick up some points in these games.
The next two could get us to 35 points.
Yeah,
and then you're pretty much home and hosed with. When you look at what's happening at the bottom, I don't think teams will get to 35 points, and I think there might be other point deductions. So
exactly that, yeah.
So that's I think everything is keep everyone fit for those two games.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about Leicester in a bit. It's that interests me. How's he going to play Leicester? Because he's a guy that loves the cup. And
he does. Yeah.
Yeah. We're just going to take a look at the average positions, and one thing that's fairly noticeable is they didn't have as many players in our half, which shows you where the battle was in previous matches. I mean, they've sometimes had only one or two in their own half, but I tell you what, it's been really competitive. And you know what, one thing that I really was impressed by, like the level of pressing that we were doing, I mean, it must be exhausting, but we got increasingly better the game, like the more the game went on. Like even in the 90th minute or whatever, they should be knackered.
Yeah.
But they were trying to pin them in, which just shows you how much he's working them.
But it was a managed press, Sam, wasn't it?
It wasn't
a gung-ho press like it was to start with. He wanted to create chaos to start with, didn't he, Ariola? And he wanted, like you said, Neil, he wanted City to think, Jesus, what's going on here? We're not used to this.
Mm.
And to a certain extent it worked, but it did die off, particularly when the goal went against us.
Yeah.
But from the second half onwards, certainly it was a managed press, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And that's what allowed us to continue right up to the 90 sort of sixth minute or whatever it was. So it's really impressive to watch from a tactical viewpoint and fascinating. It's not something as Bournemouth fans we're used to digesting, is it really?
You get two bursts, I think, with an Iriola side. You get the burst from the start and then you can't keep that up. It's subhuman to do so. Then you get a burst after half time because they've had 10 minutes and an orange or whatever they get these days.
Yeah. What do they have? They get orange, jelly babies.
They get oranges cut in segments.
Deep.
Player's number six, and then off they go. Yeah. So, I don't think it's quite like that these days, but I'm sure there's a couple of energy drinks chucked in.
Yeah.
Then the second half normally stays on high press because on 65 minutes, you can set your watch by it.
Yeah.
They come on, bang on 65 minutes, and it's always the number 10 and one of the wingers.
Yeah.
So you just call it now, who's coming. And then there's another one sort of 5 to 10 minutes after that with the other winger.
Yeah.
It's only Solanke that he leaves on. And I think if he had another Solanke would come off after 75 minutes, particularly if we were winning.
Yeah.
Because that's what he always did at Rayo Vallecano. Yeah.
Or even if we were losing, maybe by a margin that wasn't recoverable, maybe just rest a bit of.
It's those front four that put the work in. The others realistically don't play that much different than they would have under any other manager.
And Semenya, by the way, I've never seen Ake made to look so ordinary before.
Well, it was getting him in the game, wasn't it? Which we weren't doing enough first half. The second half, the instruction clearly was get the ball to Semenya. Yeah. Why? Because we've said it before, and when he runs at a player, I mean, I used to be a fullback, and he would be my worst nightmare.
Yeah, just so direct.
He's so direct with power and pace and strength and ability.
Yeah.
So you think a Premier League winger would have been your worst nightmare as a fullback?
No, I think the dog and duck had a right winger actually. Used to cause me nightmares, and
fair point.
He's
an odd player, isn't he, Semenya? Because when he's on it, he's absolutely fantastic, and then he has the odd game where you just think he's just not, his touch isn't there, and
he's got such a powerful shot as well. He hits
superbly,
like, because that goal at Newcastle, it wasn't amazingly in the corner, but
no, he
just has
it.
Such power. Yeah. It's just such power.
And again, it's credit to Iriola and the coaching staff, because they brought on a player there. Because when we signed him, he was very raw.
Yeah.
And I know I've got Bristol City fans that are, you know, mates of mine that say, City.
A guy I work with at work's got a season ticket holder at Ashton Gate, and they love Scott. They can't believe Scott came to a club as low as us. So they thought he was going to go to Tottenham and be in the England World Cup squad.
Yeah.
But Semenya, they were like, he was all right. He had a great shot. And
big and strong.
Yes.
He's all right. But we turned him into a player.
What did you make of Neto yesterday? I'll tell you this, on Who Scored, they do their kind of statistical ratings. He was the best rated Bournemouth player.
Right.
So it's obviously done on some kind of stats that I don't really understand. But
is that a vote?
No, it's not. It's done.
Not a vote in Brazil.
Your various algorithms, but you can see.
Is that voting? A, Neto. S, Neto. B,
Neto. I thought he would add a few dodgy moments yesterday.
The thing that frustrates me with him is he can't catch anything. He's always got a punch.
Yeah.
And this is where he doesn't command his area, because he creates panic in the penalty box. Because when he punches, you don't know where it's going, who's going to pick it up, and it's coming back at you again.
Yeah.
There's about three or four occasions, I thought, second half and in the first half, probably, where balls were coming into the box. Just collect it,
claim it, and hold it. There was one in the second half that, you know, a non-league keeper would have come and caught. There was no one near him.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no one near him, and he punched it out.
Cool. Who's telling him to do that? Why is he doing that?
And there's one where he caught it and then dropped it, but then managed to regather as well.
He made a good save. He stood up, didn't he, and made a save.
Yeah. He's a shot stopper.
He's a great shot stopper. But then I hate it. We all say it, don't we? Oh, a keeper's a good shot stopper. Well, if you ain't a good shot stopper, you ain't going to be a keeper, are you?
No. But he makes saves that other people wouldn't.
Yeah, he does.
But
he also does things.
The command of the box is just not there. And I think I would imagine Iriola's probably saying, I want a top class keeper next year to rival him, because I don't think, without any disrespect to them, I don't think Radu's maybe a top class keeper. And I think Chavez is similar to Neto in that he's a above average shot stopper, but also didn't command his box. It'll be interesting next year.
So based on what you've seen then, I mean, it's been a while since we played Arsenal, obviously, but in recent months, we've played Liverpool and Man City. Whether Arsenal will be up there, I don't know. Their win against Newcastle suggests they might be. Who are you fancying?
I still don't think you can look beyond Man City, honest. I still think that they've got the quality that they've got within the squad, the togetherness, and you know, what they've evolved to be in recent years with the manager, how he is, how he manages. I mean, it's Klopp's last season, so he's going to want to go all out to win it. I think it's a two-horse race, but I don't see Arsenal winning it. I think it is probably between Man City and Liverpool ultimately, but I just fancy City. It might be a case of have they still got the desire? They've won everything.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Have they still got that real hunger and desire? Will Liverpool have a bit more than them? But if you're talking about the man-for-man quality of the squads and the managers and where they're at,
yeah,
I can't look beyond City.
No, I think...
I mean, they've got to play each other as well, haven't they, at Anfield?
Yeah, well, that's huge.
Yeah,
that's massive.
That is massive. I think Arsenal will... Arsenal are as good as them, but I think having not won it, they will do that thing where it will get to them towards the end of the season and they'll do a stupid away result somewhere. Yeah. But they'll be close. And I think if Liverpool didn't have the injuries they had...
That's the problem.
I think because they've got some really difficult injuries to deal with. And
they've got barely any.
Injury list's getting worse. I think Liverpool would see out the season without losing if they had all their players fit. And I think Man City will also go on one of those runs like they do where they concentrate, they'll see out the season without losing. So because of Liverpool's injuries, I think Man City might just pip it. But I would prefer anyone but them, really.
Yeah, I would, yeah, just to make things a little bit interesting. The worry is, like we've said earlier, City have not really hit top gear, have they? Yeah.
No, that's right.
And they're capable of doing that in the run-in. That would be my...
At least Liverpool have the consolation of, this could come back to bite me, I'm guessing, winning the Carabao Cup yesterday. We don't know what's happening, but I'm guessing they'll beat Chelsea. Meme it up if it's not.
Looks off in a minute, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We'll have to put it on in a minute. Look, speaking of cup competitions, Leicester FA Cup on Tuesday. I don't know. Do you think being a Leicester, if you were the Leicester manager, with the results going the way they did the weekend, with Leeds beating them, closing the gap to 6 points. I mean, the gap between those two teams was a lot more than that previously. Do you think he might be starting to feel the pressure of thinking, actually, let's maybe not play our star men here, so we might get an easier ride? Or do you think that won't be in his logic?
It's a difficult one because football is based on momentum, and that confidence, momentum, mentality is a huge thing. But we're talking about a side in the Championship, but it obviously plays a lot more games Saturday, Tuesday, whatever it is. So there is going to have to be some management there of players, I think. I think he'll want to play a strong side because he needs them to bounce. Well, they lost two in a row now, Leicester, didn't they? Home to Borough and away at Leeds.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to pull a result out from somewhere because they'll get stuck in a rut. He doesn't want to put a second string team out at Bournemouth, I don't think, and then get smacked 4 or 5.
No.
So I think it's going to be a balance for him. It's a job to know what he'll do because obviously the Premier League, getting back to the Premier League for them is the priority, massively the priority above the FA Cup.
They normally play first teams, don't they? So because he's from Man City and Pep's assistant, and Pep always respects cup competition.
I think he just thinks it's
what he does. But would he want someone that is really key to them, like Dewsbury Hall? Would he want to rest him? I don't know. I think they'll probably come with a first team.
Yeah.
Because he's not really worried about Leeds. He's the gap to third's a little bigger, isn't it?
Yes.
So gap to third.
That's what he won't worry. You know, no one really cares whether you come first or second in the championship. The prize is 120 million and the knock on millions. So what more interesting? What we do?
So, I mean, we'll go strong. I mean, previous suggests that we probably will. And Neil, if we win it, 19 minutes to Wembley.
I know.
Hopefully, we get a favourable draw.
There aren't that many ones left.
No, there's not. It's just
they all avoided each other, didn't they? So you've got to, I think, for a team like Bournemouth to, you know, do what like Wigan did and get to cup finals, you've kind of got to hope for Liverpool and Man City to draw each other.
Yeah.
You've got the draws have got to work out on the other side in your favour. Yeah. They've all avoided each other, haven't they?
But then if it's a home draw, you know, like based on what we've seen only on Saturday, then we can give them a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can. It is a big game. I do think, in answer to your question, he'll go strong, Sam. I do.
I hope so.
I think, again, like Neil said,
there'll be changes, though.
There'll be a few changes.
They put too much in last night.
Yeah, yeah. There will be changes, but I think he'll be a strong 11. He does like the cups, doesn't he?
Will he be will we be 5-0 up at half time?
Well, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? But I can't see it. I think Leicester are a far better side than Swansea, unfortunately.
Yeah. They are. I mean, Leicester are probably when you look at them on paper and you see the way they played this year, they probably wouldn't be in the bottom three
in the Premier League. You were playing a Premier League team.
We were playing a Premier League team, yeah. And they got big backing. They've got half of the Ted Mack stand, haven't they? So they'll have a very noisy corner and they'll be up for it.
It'll be a tough game.
I just hope we're not... Game. Oh, didn't we play brilliantly against Man City? Yeah. Sap the energy a bit in the legs. So I imagine we'll see Sinisterra start.
Yeah.
I would imagine Billing might start.
Yeah, he's back in the Tuesday night. Yeah.
He's back for Tuesday night. So
he could start Billing, yeah.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if NSNL starts.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Because we've got a Manny Solanke, because we've got to keep one eye on Burnley and Sheffield United as well.
Well, I just, you know what? You read my mind, because I just brought up the fixtures. I mean, that's not a bad month, is it? That's not a bad month. So Burnley away, Sheffield United at home, Luton Town at home. That's the rearranged game, of course. Wolves away, which could be tricky. Everton at home.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking 15 points.
Well, I'm certainly thinking there's got to be a minimum of 10 points there for us.
Yeah, yeah.
Which puts us on, what, 38? And then that's going up to what, Sam? The end of March?
Let's go to the end of March.
So you've got 2 months nearly left of the season then to beat our record total, which is 46 points. It's there for us, isn't it? I still think a finishing top... I said it back in when we were on our good run. If we can finish top of the bottom half... We had a great season, and I still think that's there for.
Because we've not been played badly this year, calendar year. We've just stopped scoring.
Yeah, that's all
it is. We've missed some ridiculously easy chances.
We've been clinical.
Yeah, Semenya at West Ham. You can go back and name all of them where there were so many games. If we just buried that one thing, because that's what we did in the run. You know, when we beat Palace and Man United run, we were just clinical.
Yeah.
Well, even in April, I'm looking at let's say Crystal Palace at home, then Luton away. We got Man United at home, so who knows when Man United will turn
very winnable.
Up. Yeah, you never know. Villa away, that'll be tough.
One. Yeah.
Brighton,
you
never know. They're a side these days that are like, you know, which Brighton turns up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. They've got Europe distractions as well. They may still have by then, who knows.
So, I mean,
Brentford
could,
home as well.
Could we be breaking our 46 points record this season? Or is that too premature to say?
Not really. I think it's there for us. I really don't. I think we've got the squad and the quality to do it and the manager to do it, the potential to do it. It's whether we can...
The worry for me was the Forest and the Fulham games.
Yeah.
Because at West Ham, we were superb. We just didn't score. It's the Forest and the Fulham games where I just thought it looked like we'd just gone back off the boil.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we were back on the boil yesterday, but we can't just go on the boil for Man City. We've got to stay on the boil for...
I wonder why that was. I wonder what it was that just... Because we weren't at the races then. It's not like we were... I mean... I think we did outshoot them like 3-1 or something, Fulham, but in terms of on-target shots, they had more on-target.
We just kept shooting ourselves in the foot. That's what we did, Sam, defensively, in both boxes, but defensively.
The slips.
Yeah,
slipped. You can't account for that, but the second goal was poor. And then as soon as we get ourselves back in it at 2-1, you think, game on, there's something here for us. We go and concede immediately. And the Forest game, let's be honest, we've probably talked about it, but Nuno did a job on us tactically.
Yeah.
To frustrate us. That was the game plan and that's what happened. And credit to him and Forrest for that. It's just the way it went on the day. But I'm encouraged by yesterday because we could have stayed out of them. We could have lost by a big margin yesterday, couldn't we? And really been in that rut where you're thinking, we're on a slippery slope here, back towards a bit of a relegation dogfight towards the end of the season. But at the moment, I don't have any concern. No.
The last two games, Newcastle, we were superb, weren't we?
We should have won the game.
Should have won the game. And again, slip in the last minute.
Yeah. A lot of things have contrived against us. There's been some unfortunate incidents in there, but we've got to be more clinical in both boxes.
Yeah.
And that's the key because everything else is superb, isn't it?
Yeah. It's all looking good. So, tomorrow then, it's the FA Cup. And we're hoping that we manage to get through. We'll have some preview content out on the YouTube channel. If you've been listening, by the way, thank you very much. We're going to probably close it up now, but Neil, it's been brilliant. Thank you so much.
It's good to be back.
And Matt, that's your debut for the second look.
Is it?
Brilliant as ever.
Debut second look. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, lads.
You know, we have a thing where you got to sing a song on your debut.
Yeah, that's right.
Sing a song?
Yeah, you know, like in your underpants.
Blimey.
We've all done it.
Have you?
Yeah.
I don't remember watching that. If you wanted to sing a song, lads, I'll sing a song.
Yeah, maybe that'll be for our Telegram group. We'll do it on that, right?
Yeah.
Look, thanks for watching. Thank you for listening. Much appreciated. Well done, Liverpool. We'll see you. Or you'll be hearing us in the next one very soon. At the Cherries.
At the Cherries.
At the Cherries.
it. It's a cheeky one. Square!
Podcast Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.